Hello and welcome back to our rolling coverage on Iran's military action, retaliatory actually action against the Israeli regime and different aspects of it. We have been covering this from different angles in our rolling coverage, and now we're going to continue with that. So allow me to invite military analyst and expert this time from Beirut, the Lebanese capital. I'm going to be joined by Abdulrahman Shohaitli. He's a military analyst. So let me ask Abdulrahman his analysis of this operation that was conducted by Iran's RGC that has been really large in scale. In terms of military prowess, military capabilities, and precision targeting, tell us about the operation and how it could actually kind of change the equations and maybe mindsets of some analysts in this part of the world.
The operation achieved its direct results and its indirect results. One of the direct results was they wanted to discipline and punish the officials in the Zionist entity, and this took place whereby the Israeli cabinet held a meeting underground, and the Prime Minister of the Israeli entity left his home and went and hid in one of the houses in Tel Aviv. When it comes to the indirect goals, in addition to the airbase from where the warplanes launched to target the Iranian consulate in Damascus, this base was targeted directly, whereby Iranian missiles struck it directly. And other most important goals were that the locations of the Israelis and his allies were discovered, the counter-operation. So in case a real confrontation, a real war were to take place, all of the air defenses of the Israeli enemy were discovered, along with the air defenses of its enemy. Second of all, Israel's allies were also identified, including or amongst the neighboring countries which Israel relied on. Only Jordan responded to the wishes of the Israeli enemy to countering the attack. And so there was a real political separation of the allies in the region. When it comes to the international allies, it also became clear that there were three countries who are ready to intervene on the side of Israel in case of a war: France, Germany, and Britain. What's more important than all of this is that for the Iranian forces benefited from this experience, as they made sure that they had missiles that could reach the occupied Palestinian territories, whether it be in the north or in the central region or in the south, meaning that they reached the south, Eilat, the Iranian missiles and the drones. They also reached the upper Galilee and also Tel Aviv, and they went over Jerusalem, and the missiles were observed as they moved above Al-Quds. So the situation in occupied Palestine is open in front of the Iranian drones and missiles. Of course, the operation did not strive to destroy the capabilities of the Israeli enemy. They, neither the strategic or the military capabilities, they also did not strive or did not aim at the civilians present in occupied Palestine. For this reason, the direct goal was to punish the officials, and they were punished, and bombarding the sites which were used to bomb the consulate, and this also happened. Regarding the element of surprise for the West and for the Israeli enemy, it was that the skies of occupied Palestine were open skies to the Iranian Air Force, whether it be drones or missiles. And this is a big change in the offensive strategy of the Islamic Republic of Iran, which has proven that Israel is in the range of fire, and it can do what is necessary if Israel were to once again launch such an attack on the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Okay, Abdulrahman, thank you for that. And in case the Israeli regime does not heed of Iran's warning not to continue with this, how many countries would be actually involved if this the conflict spills over across the region?
If the conflict spreads, no country, regional country, would be distant or spared, because Egypt will be impacted, it will be concerned. Jordan, it's also proven that it is a party to the conflict. Lebanon and Syria, it's known that there are allies. They are allies of the Islamic Republic in Iran. In Syria and Lebanon, they have capabilities which can confront the Israeli entity, but they didn't use their capabilities to the full extent because the Islamic Republic wanted to do this individually to a certain degree, because it wanted to punish it itself, given that it was the target, the Islamic Republic. Hence, it wanted to carry out the operation and to punish the Israeli enemy. For this reason, the resistance in Lebanon or the resistance in Syria or the resistance in Iraq, they did not enter the conflict in full force. Lebanon, Syria, Iraq, and Yemen, of course, are amongst the countries that will be directly involved in a confrontation. And it's no secret that the firepower in Lebanon, which could reach the triangle, that triangle which is known as Tel Aviv, Nazareth, and Afula, this, or Jerusalem, this is a vital triangle. If the missiles from the resistance in Lebanon are launched, there won't be enough time, and the Israeli defense system will also not be capable, the Israeli enemy system will not be capable and will not have the time to counter these missiles, because they are very close, at a very close distance from this region in Lebanon, and hence the impact will be direct and will be surprising. It's not like the missiles which came from Iran, whereby there was a certain amount of time for the Israelis, especially that Iran announced and informed the country 72 hours before, the neighboring countries, that it will carry out the bombing, and that it even informed the United States that it won't destroy the Israeli entity but will merely punish it. So hence, if the Lebanese resistance, along with the resistance in Syria and Iraq and in Yemen, if they were to intervene, along with the Palestinian resistance in Gaza, if they were all to get involved in this confrontation, then there will be a hell of fire of missiles coming at the same time towards the Israeli entity, and there will be a near impossibility of countering the missiles like we saw yesterday.
All right, thanks for that. Abdulrahman Shohaitli, military analyst, who joined me from Beirut with his analysis. Now, let's continue with the rolling coverage. Let me, from London, bring in Kim Sharif. Kim, we had a number of Western countries, you know, recommending all sides to keep restraint. Now, we had a couple of them, like the UK, France, and Germany. They actually went much further ahead, and they were trying to, actually, this is what they did on the ground, to protect Israel in different ways and militarily. And they actually proved to give Tel Aviv not only logistical support, intelligence support, money and funds, they also stood out there for the Israeli regime, for the child killer regime in Palestine, and they practically supported and they wanted to check, actually, the Iranian missiles to stop them from reaching the occupied territories. Tell us about the incentive for the three European countries I mentioned. And also, the funny thing is the rhetoric they mentioned that this is, they are standing there for Israel. This is an act of self-defense, and they are sticking with the Israeli regime for that. Israel is the attacker here, not the one that's doing self-defense.
They need to be very careful about how they approach this matter, as far as I can see, because as I've said it before, there is a suggestion that they are being racist about the way they approach international law in the first place. Secondly, they cannot assert something that has no basis whatsoever under the law, which is self-defense for an occupying force. An occupying force doesn't have the right to defend itself. It has an obligation to protect the people it is occupying, which this Zionist entity is not doing. Thirdly, they need to remember that it is in their best interest at the end of the day for there to be an international system based on law and practice and custom. International law system has been developing for hundreds of years, and during the last 100 years nearly, the Western world has been systematically working towards diminishing its correct application by approaching it in a hypocritical way. One rule for them and one rule for all others in the world, and that can't be sustained anymore. And Iran's action in particular last night suggests that the world has now changed. They need to now really be very realistic about how they look at things and how they approach things, and stop fobbing people off as if they were still colonial powers that control the world. They are not colonial powers, and they're not controlling the world. The world consists of many independent sovereign nations who have their own independent way of thinking, independent way of doing things. And things are changing now. People are becoming economically more independent of the Western world. So it is not in their best interest to carry on this hypocritical way of dealing with the rules of international law when it comes to this Zionist regime. They know very well that the Zionist regime has never complied with any rule of international law. They can't continue to pretend to be on its side because it is the righteous one. It isn't the righteous one. Everyone knows it. You need to look at the case of Nicaragua against Germany, for example, where smaller countries in the world are becoming empowered to stand up to these developed nations and saying, look, you have broken the law, and we are here to get you to be held to account for it. Nicaragua's case against Germany is very interesting because it's a rare occasion in the history of international law where one country takes another country to the court, to the ICJ, on a matter relating to yet another country. And that's a very interesting move. And it is likely that Nicaragua will win on this case because the prima facie case of genocide against the Zionist regime has been, in my view, already established. Because if there wasn't a case to answer, in the minds of 15 highly qualified top lawyers in the world, there is a prima facie case to answer for genocide, then you need to accept that ultimately it is highly likely that the Zionist regime will be found guilty of genocide. Look, you don't need to be an expert on international law. You don't need to be an expert on anything for you to see the horrors they have been committing in relation, for example, to Al-Shifa Hospital. Bodies are still being discovered. Children being bound and shot at close range. And you see the IOF bragging about their crimes in TikTok and elsewhere. Their aim was to terrorize the people of the world to show them that, you know, we are the force and we can do what we want and we can get away with it. They didn't realize that all of that is clear evidence of genocide. And so the Western world needs to really review its position and be very careful not to carry on this colonial mindset in relation to the rest of the world, because the world is now maturer, awaker, and more able to speak up And as I've said, you can see examples as in the Nicaragua case. In the South African case, in the ICJ itself, is another example of world waking up to reality and saying, no, we will not tolerate impunity anymore, because it is in our collective interest internationally to uphold the rule of law.
Right, exactly. Okay, that's almost all the time we have for this rolling coverage. So allow me to thank my guests. We had Kim Sharif, Yemeni activist and lawyer in London. Thank you for the insight and contribution. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Tell a little about yourself.
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of law.
Listeners special.
In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warmest greetings to you all. Welcome to another edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, April 14th, 2024. I'm Atefe Irfani, hosting this program today. Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through your emails, your letters, and your messages. So please contact us and tell us what you think about our broadcasts. And if you have any message for our listeners around the world, you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program. Remember, as I always say, Listeners Special is your program, and it's your views that are important. Please keep us company until the end of the program. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, and here we've received reception reports from you, dear listeners. This time, Hemant Kumar from India has sent us reception report. Again from India, we have reception report from Bashir Ahmed, and from Mohammad Khaku from the United States, we have reception report. So, Hemant, Bashir and Mohammad, we want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. Thank you for the reception reports. And here we've received emails from around the world, which I mentioned some of your names here, and later during the program, I will read your emails. Bashir Ahmed from India has sent us a piece of email. Lou Dacheng, one of our old and regular listeners, has sent us a piece of email. And from Russia, we've received an email from Anatoly Klipov. Stay with us, please. I will be back with you. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special. And old places may be beautiful for their design, but sometimes they're beautiful because of their very age, because of the mark that time has left upon them. Save Jame Mosque is one of the historical, religious and beautiful buildings where you can see traces of three historical periods before Islam, the first centuries of the advent of Islam in Iran and the Safavid era. Isn't that interesting? Three historical periods. It's very interesting. So, before I explain more about the Save Jame Mosque in Iran, I will read one of your emails from Bashir Ahmed from India. Bashir Ahmed from India is one of our old and regular listeners who says, "Dear staff at IRIB English Radio, hereby I would like to send you my warm greetings as always. The holy month of Ramadan is over and I would like to say happy Eid to your staff and all listeners who celebrate this blessed feast. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, Iran, to Bashir Ahmed from India, and thank you very much for writing to us. Thank you for your congratulation message on Eid al-Fitr. Actually, happy Eid al-Fitr to all Muslim listeners and to all Muslim people around the world. Bashir Ahmed from India, thank you very much for writing to us. Please accept our EQSL as confirmation to this email. Write to us soon and tell us your views about our programs. We wish you luck. This is Listeners Special, and I was saying, Save Jame Mosque is located in the city of Save in Markazi province, central Iran. This historical mosque is made of adobe and mud. The building of Save Jame Mosque consists of a courtyard and a dome in its southern part, two evans, a minaret, several prayer halls or shabistans, and old mihrabs decorated and built with Kufic and Sol's scripts. The beautiful Iranian architecture, along with the handmade art of turquoise tiling of the dome, has doubled the beauty of the Save Mosque. Save Jame Mosque was registered in the National Heritage List close to 80 years ago. The mosque underwent renovation and reconstruction during various historical periods. Yes, this is the story of Save Jame Mosque. And here, let's see what Lou Dacheng from China says. Lou Dacheng is one of our old and regular listeners. Dear friends of English section of IRIB, actually IRIB English Radio. Hello, I am Lou Dacheng from China. I am your loyal listener. I always listen to your programs on shortwave. I know Islamic Republic of Iran is an Islamic country, so I would like to say Eid Mubarak First of all, salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, Iran. Lu Dacheng from China, thank you very much for writing to IRIB English Radio. And thank you very much for your congratulation message on Eid al-Fitr. Eid Mubarak, thank you. In our language, in Farsi language, however, in Arabic, they also say Eid Mubarak, meaning happy Eid, happy this occasion, Eid al-Fitr. Eid Mubarak and happy Eid al-Fitr to all Muslims around the world, especially IRIB English Radio listeners. Lu Dacheng from China, thank you very much for writing to us. We wish you all the best and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. An electronic QSL will be sent to you as confirmation to your email. Welcome back. Let me add something about the Saveh Jameh Mosque. Experts believe the beautiful prayer halls and corridors of the mosque with their brick facades were built during the Seljuk era. It's more like a museum. Archaeological samples dating back to the pre-Islamic, early Islamic and Safavid eras have been unearthed by archaeologists conducting research on the mosque. The main mihrab of the mosque has vertical and horizontal inscriptions on its three walls. They are engraved with Kufi and Sulfi scripts and Quranic verses. Very beautiful. You can't believe it. God bless the archaeologists of this mosque. Jameh Mosque of Saveh is a valuable legacy in religion, architecture, painting, tiling, and ornamentation, such as plasterwork and Kufic scripts. So, I prefer to talk less so that you may travel to Iran, to Saveh in Markazi province and in central Iran, and visit this mosque. This historical mosque attracts tourists and pilgrims from different Islamic countries and from around the world. So just pack your suitcase and take a visit to this historical mosque and don't forget to take a camera with yourself because it's very beautiful and you shouldn't miss the beauties of this mosque. Yes, life is short, so don't miss its countless beauties. And as I said in the introduction part of our program, Anatoly Klepov from Russia has sent us a piece of email. Let's see what Anatoly from Russia says. Dear friends, greetings from Russia. I am your regular listener. My hobby is listening to radio from different stations around the world. This email contains a report on the reception of your radio station, which will give a full assessment of audibility in Moscow. Hope my report helps. Technical service of your radio station. Please confirm this reception. I would be glad to receive information about your station. Thank you. Salam and greetings from Tehran, from Iran, and from IRIB English Radio to you, Anatoly Klepov from Russia. We are grateful to you for this email. An electronic QSL will be sent to you as confirmation to this email. As you said, of course, your reports will help us promote the quality of our programs. Thank you for that. We wish you all the best and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. And you should know that the information about our station, IRIB English Radio, is available at our website at parstoday.ir/en. And there you can find the information about our radio, IRIB English Radio. Thank you again, Anatoly Klepov from Russia. And here we've come to the end of our today's edition of Listeners Special. In this edition, we read your emails and your reception reports, and we talked about Saveh Jameh Mosque in central Iran. We had a very good time being together. But before saying goodbye to you, I just wanted to send my warm gratitudes and appreciations to those of you who have kindly sent us emails, letters, and reception reports from around the world, including Muhammad Khaku from the U.S., Bashir Ahmad from India, Hemant Kumar from India, and Lu Dacheng from China, also Anatoly Klepo from Russia. Many thanks for being with us. Please keep in touch with us at IRIB English Radio and Listeners Special Program. We wish you all the best. God bless you and goodbye.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We will be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send us emails to englishradio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at parstoday.ir/en. Our phone number is 0098-21-2201-3720. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuha alladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis-sabri was-salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is the way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sayyid Muhammad Rizvi.
When we look at the term wasi, you know wasiyat, everybody knows about it. In Farsi, in Urdu, in Gujarati. And that's where you get the word wasi. Basically, wasi means somebody who will be the executor of the will of the deceased. He will handle the estate of the deceased. Now, that's more in a family context. When you talk about the wasi of a leader, it has a broader meaning there. You are talking about somebody who is going to take over the affairs of the community or the nation of the leader who was there before. Now the question comes up, when was Ali appointed as the wasi of the Prophet? And this is from the Sunni sources, from Imam Ahmad bin Hanbal, Al-Tabarani, Al-Haskani, and many others, where they say Salman Farsi one day asked the Prophet, because this issue of wasi and successor was a serious question. Everybody had this in their mind. You know, after Rasulullah, what will happen? So Salman Farsi one day asked Rasulullah, Ya Rasulullah, Inna li kulli nabiyyin wasiyyan. Faman wasiyyuka? That, oh, the messenger of Allah, every nabi has a wasi. Who is your wasi? We don't know the context, who were around at that time. The Prophet did not answer. He was silent. But then Salman says, later on, maybe next day or third day, he says, Rasulullah saw me, and then he called me. that, oh Salman, you know, he says, I quickly went towards the Prophet and I said, Labbaik. And then the Prophet said, oh Salman, do you know who was the wasi of Musa? Because this was the question he'd asked, that every Nabi had a wasi, who is your wasi? And Salman is somebody who had read the scriptures of the previous religions before he came to Islam. He was Zoroastrian, then he became Christian, then he became a Muslim. And so he immediately said, yes, the wasi and successor of Musa was Yusha bin Nun. Yusha bin Nun, so the Prophet said, you know why? Why was he the wasi of Musa? He said, because he was a'lamuhum yawma idhin. Those days, Yusha bin Nun was the most learned person in their ummah. And this is where now the Prophet responds to his question. He says, now that you know what is the criteria, wasiyyi wa mawdi'i sirri wa khayru man atruku ba'di, my successor, my confidant, the best person that I leave after me, wa yanjizu idatin, who will fulfill my promises, wa yaqdhu dayni, and who will fulfill, pay my debts, is Ali bin Abi Talib. And so we see that, you know, even history has been, the way they treated this incidents regarding Amir al-Mu'mineen, either selective or summarizing or changing words, or sometimes totally they don't even talk about it. Especially when it comes to this issue of Da'wat al-Ashira, even these ahadith of the Prophet where he presents Ali as the wasi, they also have been either ignored or rejected or diluted. I'll give you one more example from Bukhari and Muslim. Both actually in their books have quoted a person by the name of Aswad bin Yazid, that he says one day, he says, we were there in the presence of Aisha, and people were talking about Ali as the wasi of Rasulullah. And when she heard that, she rejected this. And this is where she says, and these are the actual words from her, when did the Prophet make him a wasi? Now she only thinks that this would only happen at the last, you know, moments of the life of Rasulullah. So she said, when did the Prophet make him a wasi? While I was the one who supported his head on my lap, and he asked for a tray, and then he collapsed, and then he died. I didn't hear him making anyone his wasi. فَمَتَ عَوْسَ إِلَيْهِ. When did Rasulullah make Ali the wasi? According to one of the Turkish fellow, Muhammad Guzal Amudi, who then, you know, studied more about his own faith, studied in the seminaries of the Sunnis, and then started looking at history, eventually it was his research that brought him to Islam of Ahlul Bayt. And he wrote a book, you know, his journey to the Saqalain. And there he, after this narration of Aisha, he says, you know, I'm really amazed that Bukhari jumps on something that he wished to find. And so he jumps on this statement of Aisha. Ah, see, she's saying that Rasulullah didn't make anyone a wasi. But he doesn't realize that if Aisha says, I don't know, her ignorance does not negate the presence of the wasiyyat of Rasulullah. You come and tell me, Maulana, this is a hadith I saw somewhere, can you verify it? I said, I don't know. If I say I don't know, does it mean that it's wrong? It just means that I have not read it. It has not come across my studies. But I cannot say this doesn't exist. I don't know. Maybe others have heard it. Others have read it. And so this is the point, that even when others are sitting there in the presence of Aisha and talking about Ali as a wasi, it means they knew about it. Bukhari doesn't realize, by quoting this, he's actually affirming the statement that there were people at that time who believe in Ali as the wasi of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. We will say to our respected mother that your father was very wise, that when he was coming to the stage of death, he realized, I must appoint someone as my successor. But your husband didn't have that wisdom, na'uzubillah, that he brought the last message of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and left it just unopened, you know, up open-ended there. And didn't even talk about who will be his Khalifa and his Wasi. You know, this is where we come to realize, when we say Ali is Yaqeen, and surely he is Mazloom, he is Mazloom in history also.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
روحي كريم عظيم عليم حليم حكيم متين غفور شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Shaima al-Sawaf is one of hundreds of families across Gaza partly or entirely wiped out by the Zionist regime bombardment. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East I wrote, the life of Shaima al-Sawaf was turned upside down in an instant. The 30-year-old, who has lived in Jordan since her marriage in 2013, lost 50 members of her family after an Israeli regime missile weighing hundreds of kilograms struck their home in Gaza. The al-Sawaf family is one of hundreds of families in the Gaza Strip that have been partially or wholly wiped out by the Zionist regime's bombardment of the enclave since October 7th. Last summer, Shaima visited her family in Gaza. She spent weeks with them as if she was saying goodbye without knowing it. Among those killed were her father, Mustafa, her mother, Maha, her brothers, Mahmoud, Montasser, Marwan, and Ahmad, her nieces and nephews, Bara, Maha, Karam, Shahad, and Omar, her sister-in-law, Zain. Omar was the youngest at only 18 months old, while a number of her uncles, cousins, and their wives also lost their lives. The bad news arrived quickly. Hours after the bombing, Shaima was able to call her cousin, who continued to cry bitterly down the phone. Shaima's husband took the phone and spoke to him, then fell silent, ended the call, and tears began to flow down his cheeks. "I went crazy. I lost my nerve. I started screaming. Tell me who among them died," recalled Shaima. She said, "He said desperately, all of them. I had a nervous breakdown and didn't feel anything around me after that." More than 31,000 Palestinians have been martyred in the ongoing Zionist regime's assault, while more than 71,000 have been injured, according to the Palestinian Ministry of Health. 40 days before the start of the Zionist regime's assault, Shaima left for her home in Amman. When she met her husband, a refugee from Jaffa, and left Gaza, she felt that she had left a piece of her heart behind. But she remained in daily contact with her family for hours, following their news and sharing their events from a distance. She said, "The war began with a constant anxiety inside me. I could barely sleep, and I watched the news and the sights of the Israeli bombing, which didn't differentiate between man, woman, child, elderly, sick, and wounded. If I hadn't left, if I had stayed and died with them." With the beginning of the Israeli regime airstrikes, Shaima's long calls to her family turned into short words just to make sure they were okay. The family left their home in the Sheikh Ajlin neighborhood when the bombing intensified and moved to a residential building in At-Tofa area where Shaima's uncles live and where her father also had an apartment. At dawn on November 18th, Shaima read the news that a residential building had been targeted in the same area. She was terrified and started crying while trying to contact her family, but no one answered. She said, "My anxiety and fear increased. My husband tried to calm me down, but I felt a disaster was approaching. Communications were cut off from Gaza and I knew nothing. I didn't sleep. I didn't eat. I did nothing but pray and cry." Due to the lack of facilities and the imposed siege, the civil defense crews were unable to work effectively at the site of the bombing. The whole family was struck under the rubble and were extracted dead, except for Zaid, aged 8, the son of Mahmoud, who was killed with his wife and the rest of their children. Shaima describes what happened as an unforgettable tragedy. Little by little, the news began to reach Shaima. The next day, she received word of the survival of her brothers, Montasser, Marwan, Mu'taz, and Muhammad, who were injured. Montasser, her journalist brother, who lost one of his eyes in the bombing, called and began to console her and reassure her about him and the rest of her siblings who had survived. She said, "I continue to cling to the hope that a number of my siblings had survived, despite my intense pain over the loss of my parents and my nephews. I spoke every day with Marwan and Montasser, and I didn't know that these were farewell calls to them as well." On December 1st, an Israeli regime plane bombed the Al-Daraj neighborhood in Gaza City, killing Montasser, Marwan, and a number of other relatives. Montasser remained bleeding for about half an hour without any ambulances being able to reach him. Rayyan 10, one of Shaima's three children, sits in his room in Amman and cries hard. Shaima said, He loved his cousins very much and talked to them constantly. He had a special relationship with my father. I'm still in pain like the first day of the massacre. I talk to their pictures and imagine them next to me. The most painful thing for Shaima is that she couldn't look at them one last time before burying them because of the war and siege. She said, Gaza is everything I love, and it has the smell of my family and their memories, adding she hoped to return one day. Shaima is left with only her two brothers, Mu'taz, and the injured Muhammad, who needs to travel for treatment but still can't. She talks to them daily and they try to heal their wounds together by remembering the family members amid constant fear due to the continued Israeli regime aggression. Before the war began, due to a glitch in her phone, Shaima lost her photos of her family and was unable to recover them. She said, I got very angry and cried more. I want to look at them again, but I don't have all the pictures. Our first house was completely bombed and turned into rubble, and all my brother's phones were crushed by that. Today, Shaima lives a severely diminished life. Despite everything that has happened, she says that she's still waiting for one of them to contact her, even if the wait is forever.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of the speech delivered on June 23rd, 2015 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution. The second point is that I consider the negotiating team, the friends who have shouldered these responsibilities during this time, to be trustworthy, brave, courageous, and religious. Everyone should know this. Many of the participants in this meeting are not aware of the content of the negotiations. If you are aware of the content and details of the negotiations and what happens there, then you would surely confirm part of what I am saying. Besides, I know some of these friends up close, and I know some from their performance record. They are religious and trustworthy people. Their goal is to further the affairs of the country and to solve problems that they are working on it. They really have a national zeal and courage. They are confronted with a large number of people. I do not want to mention the appropriate description of these people because sometimes there are certain descriptions which some people really deserve, but it is not appropriate for us to present it. They really express their viewpoints and pursue matters in the face of such people with complete courage and with absolute precision.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The third point is about the esteemed critics. I am not against criticism. It is all right to criticize, and it is necessary and helpful. However, everyone should pay attention to that criticizing is easier than taking action. We easily see the other person's flaws while we fail to see the dangers, difficulties, concerns, and problems that he deals with. This is like watching someone who wants to dive into a pool. Imagine that you are standing beside a pool. Someone has gone up and he wants to dive into the pool from a height of 10 meters. You are watching him. He dives into the pool and you, who are watching him beside the pool, say, "Well, he bent his legs and knees. This is one error." Yes, this is an error, but you should climb up the diving board, take a look at the water from that height of 10 meters, and then you should make a judgment. Criticizing is easy. Of course, what I am saying should not prevent you from making criticisms. You can criticize, but you should do so by considering the fact that the other side might be aware of some of the faults that we express in our criticisms. But they have reached this conclusion anyway, because of necessity or another reason.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope, oh Allah. I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. I wanna thank you.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.